Welcome to the Marketing Optimization Podcast.
Do you want to learn how to optimize your website, improve your online marketing, generate more leads, increase conversions, and most of all, maximize your ROI?
Learn how while Alex interviews the best in digital marketing.
Now, enough with the buzzwords. Let's get started.
Broadcasting from the Alex Designs office,
here is your host, Alex Harris.
Hi, and welcome to Marketing Optimization with Alex Designs. I'm your host, Alex Harris, and today we're chatting with Brian Massey. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Brian, to get started, I want to ask, what is your definition of optimization, and why is it beneficial?
My definition of optimization. So, our definition of optimization is understanding your visitors. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. You're doing tests to increase revenue or to increase leads. But ultimately, you're only doing that because you're getting to know what your visitors like and prefer better and better. With every test, you learn something. People are fond of saying that even losing tests or inconclusive tests teach you something about your visitors. Of course, here we much prefer the winners because they deliver the insights with some nice revenue on the side. So,
now, you run a company, Conversion Sciences. Mm-hmm. And you work with a lot of clients, and you also post a lot of great content. Tell us a little bit about your company. How did you guys get started, and what you do in the conversion space?
Boy, we've been doing this for a long time. So I founded the company in 2007, I'm a computer programmer. That out of college, I went into sales, technical sales. I sold semiconductors. I was a corporate marketer for periods of time. And so I can really relate to some of the marketers in your audience who are struggling with the people making decisions or guiding decisions or setting budgets and trying to get some of this conversion stuff on the plate. And then this is the second business that I've started. So I don't know what you do when you take a programmer with sales and corporate marketing experience who has a preference for starting his own business. I don't know what else you do other than become a conversion scientist. One of our mottos is that we want to use rigorous creativity. So that implies that we're still marketing to humans, and we're having to be creative in that effort, but we need to add some discipline and rigor to that, and that's really where the science comes in. So it was a very natural fit.
Now, convergence science is probably has its own framework. Tell us a little bit about your strategy, about how you do your conversion optimization.
Sure. So, yes, conversion science is based on the scientific method. And for those of you that aren't familiar with scientific method, the broader steps of that very quickly. The first thing you're doing is you're evaluating what data you have, what information you have, and you're coming up with ideas, guesstimates. In a corporate marketing environment like your audience might be working in, a lot of those come from executives who have an idea, from people on the team who think, what if we tried? But that's okay. Those are less evaluated, but that's okay. You can put that into the idea pile, and we call those hypotheses. The next thing you want to do is you want to say, all right, what are we trying to accomplish with this hypothesis? This becomes your test output. And then you say, what could we do to test this hypothesis? And there's a little twist in here because you want to test only that hypothesis. So you have five ideas. You can't really put five changes on the page. Test it and understand what really made the difference. So evaluate, develop hypotheses, design a test, execute the test, and then you evaluate what came out on the other end. The tools that are on the market, and we use third-party tools, the OptimizeLeads, Convert.com, Visual Website Optimizers of the world, Test and Target for Enterprise, they will do the math for you and do the homework for you of making sure your tests are getting to what we call statistical significance. And at that point, you have a basis in science for whatever happened in the test. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about some of that software that you use. If people are using the software already to test, or they've been doing it for a while, what would be some overall tips you would use to get the best out of it?
Honestly, to get the best out of it, I would not use the WYSIWYG portion of it. So the best way to get good results out of your testing tools is to have a good JavaScript and HTML and CSS guy. What you want to do is let them do the coding that moves things around, that changes text, that removes things from the page, adds things from the page, swaps out pictures, whatever you're trying to do in your test. If you can have somebody who can program that for you, you're going to have much better results, because the WYSIWYG can break on different platforms, different browsers. And we have a test lab here that's got a little bit of just about everything. We can test almost any platform that our clients see a strong revenue traffic stream from. So that would be my first one. My second one would be to take the time to do the QA. Go ahead and even if you're running around to people saying, can you do this on your iPhone? Does anybody have an old iPad? If you can collect these devices, because what happens is we launch the test and we get our results and don't realize there was a large segment that was seeing a broken page or something. And that just destroys, it means you're making decisions poorly. So,
yeah, well, ensuring that your test is running properly and that the users are seeing it how you want to is absolutely essential, you know, figuring out that QA. What would you say would be some actionable tips to, you know, really improve your conversion rates from that? You know, once you have you kind of have an idea of how to create a hypothesis, maybe it's the headline or the call to action, maybe it's not working or right. What would you tell a company in order to set up those tests or get the most out of their conversion rates?
Well, so, you know, when we set up a test, the first thing we want to do is make sure everything's being measured correctly in analytics, which is your behavioral database. It's generally pretty easy to set up your tools to track to a goal. But the places that we tend to see the biggest wins early on is in language. So making headlines a little bit more emotional. Getting rid of what Brian Eisenberg calls we copy, where you talk about we and our customers and we're the leader and our company. Go in and count the number of times you say we, us, our clients, or your company name in your copy, and you start to get an idea that you're talking about you. One of the mantras of the conversion scientist is your visitors do not care about your company or your products. And it's true. And you're like, they're coming to my website. Wow. Why don't they care? It's because they care about their problems. You have to address that before you have permission to talk about yourself. So language, headlines, copy, the use of bullets, well-crafted bullets and things like that, that's where we find our wins.
Yeah. Yeah, figuring out what's in it for them and kind of defining that and building the page based on some emotion to figure out what problem they're really going to solve. Because more than likely, they're coming off of pay-per-click, and they're trying to find some problem that's relevant to their issue at that time. So be there to solve that problem at that time.
Yeah, and for corporate marketers, I understand that there are a lot of stakeholders in the website. So if you want to really test some copy, this is where landing pages come in great. They're off to the side. They're not part of the corporate website. So you're a little more under the radar. You can direct specific traffic to them, and you can start to play with some of these messages. Things that you learn in your tests, you can take over to your other marketing. So if you find a big win with a message on a landing page, consider testing that in your email. Find a way to get that into the corporate site and see if you can get more people taking action on the corporate site. So this is an example of a test that I think really illustrates that point.
Now, if you're listening to this on audio only version of the podcast, you can check out the video at marketingoptimization.tv.
All right. So this is an example of an offer, and this is a little bit of a quiz for you. So this is for a site that actually generates leads for treatment centers, addiction treatment centers, some people who are struggling with alcohol or substance abuse. This call to action is designed to get them to pick up the phone and call. And in this case, calls are far more valuable than form fills. And I think you're going to find that in almost any industry you're in. If you've got a call center, or if you have people manning the phones, you're going to have better results if you can get them on the phone. But this is just a text change. So we wanted to test four different headlines. So, can we help call? And we always put the phone number in the headlines. This is another thing that we've learned if you're trying to generate calls is go ahead and put the phone number in the headline. So A, we can help call. B, speak with a compassionate rehab specialist call. C, ready to start healing? If so, we can help. Ready to stop lying to yourself about addiction? We can help. Call. Now, one caveat on this is that these websites get both addicts and loved ones who are concerned about someone who they suspect is addicted. So, what do you think worked?
Speak with a compassionate rehab specialist. Ready to stop lying to yourself about. I would say C.
C? Ready to start healing? Okay. Well, let's take a look. So, the control was A. Speak with a compassionate rehab specialist. Got a 32% lift in phone calls. Ready to start healing. I'm sorry, that was an 18% drop.
I was just a loser.
But, you know, many times we think we come up with messages that contain poetry that, you know, should wake up the brain and allow a message to get in. Mm-hmm. But what they end up being is cliche. And in your language, avoid anything that's cliche. You don't want to be bottom line results. You don't want to call yourself the leader without proof of your leadership. You don't want to leverage anything. So avoid these cliche phrases that we've heard over and over again because the brain rejects them. And ready to stop lying to yourself, which was the most daring one we took, 43% increase. So the thing is that these words like compassionate and lying, I mean, I think the D worked best because it really does appeal to both the addict and their loved one. Both of them are lying to themselves, either about their loved one or about themselves. And so this is pretty much hitting them over the head. It could have gone the other way. This was a risk. And so we were very interested to find this working. And this gave us some very interesting insights for us to do our next test.
Yeah, I always knew that asking some type of question kind of draws them in and then, you know, makes sense reinstating what you're actually going to do for them.
Yep. Well, there is a caveat to asking questions. So your question needs to ask, have the response be, not be yes.
Right.
The response can't be yes. It's like, are you looking for a solution for this problem?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm not going to read on. The question has to make them say, what? Or how would you do that? So your question needs to not contain its answer. It needs to lead them on. So ready to stop lying to yourself. Oh my God, what could they possibly write next?
Yeah.
It's going to make me want to read on.
That's a really great example. Really great example of tying in emotion into your headlines and then testing it from there. So what would you do from that? After you've tested the headline, what would be some other areas of that type of landing page that you start testing?
Well, so that brings up a great point. So we do what we call test cycles. And what this allows us to do is chase the rabbit all the way down the hole. So we may begin a process with our list of hypotheses. And we rank them. So we say, which ones have the most support in analytics? So if you have an idea, either from someone else or something that you're seeing in analytics, is there proof that backs that up? How difficult is it to change? It's obviously quite simple to change text. In a test, but it would be more difficult if your hypothesis was, let's add video to the page because you have to produce the video. And at the end of the day, that expense could be for naught because the video may not perform. You want to know how much of your traffic it's affecting. And you want to know from experience, from these lessons, what you've learned over your testing lifetime, what you think is going to work. So what we do is we start with something like this. We found out that lying is really strong. It's great that it appeals to both sides of the equation. And so we want to drill down more. I don't know what the follow-on tests for this particular one was, but we might have started, for instance, with compassion and saw that that had a 32% lift and said, all right, so maybe even more emotional will work. So we'll do a follow-up test against that control and say, oh, lying works. The other thing I would recommend is you're going to choose the low-hanging fruit, so the hypotheses that bubble to the top when you look at how much proof they've got, how much ROI you think they're going to develop, how difficult they're to test, et cetera. And you're going to have more than one winner often. So you might test five different things on the page. No, we're only changing one thing at a time, though, so it's not a multivariate test. But you might try four or five different treatments, and a couple may win. But when you put both of them on the page together, since they were both winners, they actually can cancel each other out and actually reduce your conversion rate. So the follow-on test often is, this worked, if we combine them, would that work? And often we find they don't. So you end up taking whichever had the best results from the previous test.
You bring up a good point, because I know I do a lot of testing, and always a client expects, you know, because you're testing something, they expect something to win. And a mm-hmm. lot of times you find a lot of losers along the way, and some of the biggest losers are probably the biggest winners in your mind, because you know not to kind of go down that path.
Right.
Have you kind of experienced that in the same way? And how do you use that knowledge to kind of continuously improve?
Well, since we are for hire, we've actually designed a process that makes it more likely that we're going to find wins early on. So that method of us ranking those hypotheses and only changing one thing at a time means that we can show some green whenever we have them come and look at the results. It is a real problem, and I acknowledge that. And so I would use a process like that to see if you can find some easy-to-test wins that are getting you these gains. It is a very realistic problem. Yes, we can learn something from the losers, but if you're trying to build momentum for your conversion process, you need to have those wins at the beginning so that you can get yourself some momentum. After that, you begin to become a little bit more philosophical about things. And probably the most important thing you're going to realize is that what you think is going to win rarely does. The pretty stuff, the well-designed stuff, the, oh, this copy is so much better. Ugly is going to beat it every time, unfortunately. So I don't know if that answered your question, but did it?
Yeah, well, definitely ugly is worth testing. You know, you may want to go down a little bit more of a direct marketing route, make the shadows a little bit ugly, bevel out the buttons, make them rounded corners, try some things that may not necessarily go into pretty web standards.
Right. And, you know, the thing is that even if ugly wins and you say, well, we want to go with pretty because that's the presence we want in the market, at least you know what you're paying for that. Essentially, image and branding marketing. You've chosen something that converts less but makes you look better, and you can say, well, it was a 15% drop in conversion, multiply that over a year, and you know what you paid for that. So
you also talked about ensuring that you're testing in the right places, the right pages with the right the most amount of opportunity, so you're not leaving a lot of money on the table. Is it is it just basically trying to figure out the top areas where they're spending the most money on their pay-per-click ads and driving the most landing pages? Is that how you were you kind of figuring out where to test properly?
Well, so in the analytics will tell us almost all that we want to know about this. So there's a number of different ways to approach it. You can start at the end and say, well, if I can get my checkout process, my shopping cart, or my registration process working, mm-hmm. any traffic I send to that is going to convert at a higher level. Mm-hmm. The truth is that you may not have enough going on there to test, mm-hmm. or that you know that the traffic is going to change. So as you change, as you begin testing upstream and driving different kinds of people to that experience, your numbers are going to change. And so you're going to want to test that again. But we go and look at analytics. We look at the entry pages, obviously, are very important. Google Analytics is a fantastic visitor flow that will show you where the main streams of visits are, where they're coming from, where they're going, how far in they're going. And you can start to look for pages that have the red waterfall, mm-hmm. which is the drop-off. Go in and look at those pages, see if they do have a high exit percentage. If you're running an e-commerce site, you can look at things like the dollar index, which tells you how many dollars that page is contributing to your bottom line. These are all just clues. And then go and look at the page and say, what could be happening on this page that's causing people to drop off? We're a big fan of Crazy Egg and ClickTail, the click heat maps, click tracking software. Mm-hmm. There are other solutions out there. Those are the ones we've enjoyed using, and we insist every one of our customers install those, because then you can look at the page and see where people are clicking. We just had a very fascinating result where a page wasn't converting for a university, and the form had name, rank, and serial number, and it had a drop-down for what your specialization was. What kind of program were you interested in? Mm-hmm. We were like, what's going on here? We went into Crazy Egg, looked at our heat maps, and we saw people were clicking on that specialization dropdown. They were using it for information. They weren't filling out the form. There was just a whole lot of people clicking on the specialization. So we said, well, let's put that in the page as part of the content and get that to drive them to a call to action. It was an amazing win. That's something we would not have seen in analytics. We would have only seen through one of these click tracking solutions.
Yeah, I use click tracking all the time, and it really is obvious once you start to look at where they're clicking, how far they're scrolling down the page, and then you can really understand the user experience to optimize from there, and along with Clicktail to figure out where their mouse is actually going as well. Great tools.
You say obvious, and I think one of the problems is that people open those pages and look at them in a vacuum rather than starting with analytics, finding problem pages, and then going where they're trying to use the information to solve a problem. If you've got a whole bunch of bubbles on there, it looks like maybe a weather forecast. It's hard to know really how you distinguish one from the other. But if you're using it in support of a hypothesis for more proof, it's a fantastic tool.
Yeah, it's the key to always have some type of goal in mind, and creating that hypothesis is you're creating a bunch of assumptions to figure out what the end goal is. May result in. Can you tell us a little bit about your best tips when you're creating that hypothesis?
Best tips for creating the hypothesis. I think it's important if you have a good ranking process, like the one I described, not to edit yourself. Go ahead and throw everything in there. Do it in a spreadsheet. You don't have to put too much in there, but you have a column for kind of what category it's in. And there's really five categories that we lump hypotheses in. And the reason is for the rabbit hole. So if we find that trust is an issue in a test, we can look at our next trust-oriented hypotheses and maybe bring that into the test cycle. So trust, as I said, is one of them. How much proof and social proof have you got on the page? The language and messaging, do we think that your value propositions are huge? I should definitely throw this in here. If you don't have the right value proposition on the page, then you are already starting way back in the pack in terms of conversion rate. So getting the language right. Is there something wrong with the layout? Forms below the fold, an image taking up too much space, rotating headers. Left to their own devices, they typically reduce conversion rates, although we figured out how to make rotating headers beat static. Where was I? Trust and proof, messaging layout, credibility. So social proof and credibility are the two other areas that we look at. If it falls into one of those five things, you'll put that on your spreadsheet, list your hypothesis, and then just do a weighting. There's a lot of proof for this, not a lot of proof. We do a 1 to 5 scale for each of those components. And so even on a long list, the things that are most likely to start, the best to start testing with, will bubble to the top.
Can you give us a little brief overview of what you learned when testing that slider test on how to maybe improve it for blogs or e-commerce?
I'll spill the beans right here. So we've done it on multiple pages now on 3 different sites. And so what we do is we do a test where we take each of the slides and we test them as static images. We find out which of those static images perform the best. And then we put those static images back and slide them in that order. So the first one is always the winner on the static test. The second one was in second place and so on. Rank them that way. At least we know that we're getting the most important message to the audience out first, maybe second, and we are able to beat any one of the static images with that. So there's, the slider presents motion. Our brains believe motion is either something we can eat or something that's going to eat us. So we have to look. And if the right messages are there at the time, then it can win.
That is certainly brilliant, I must say, because testing them individually and then organizing them in the order based on conversion rate. The key tip right there, that is excellent advice to try for yourself.
Don't tell anybody though. That's that's kind of proprietary stuff on our part.
Absolutely. Well, let's roll right into it. You've spoken about all these different ways to do this stuff, and you roll that into a training that you do for potential customers. Why don't you tell people about the training?
So what we want to do is for those folks that aren't in a position yet, don't have the budget yet to hire guys in lab coats to come in and do this for them, we want to go ahead and spill the beans on how we do it. You know, we get a lot of folks coming through here that we would love to be able to help. That just don't either have the traffic, don't have the budget, some reason they don't fit the pattern to become a client and have us work on their site. So we wanted to take them someplace where they could get that information. So our training is really focused on the 120-day process that we do. We want to teach you how to do it, show you the tools that we use, show you how we set up the analytics and eliminate some blind spots, show you how we develop our hypothesis list, give you our ranking algorithms, and then the process of how to set up tests that only change one thing and not change other variables. There's a lot of minefields in that process, so we're going to focus on that. And what we want to do that is we're going to do that in a small group, a relatively small group, non-competing companies, combine the training with weekly calls where we go through and answer specific questions on each of those things. So it's I think it'll be an intimate and helpful group. If you're serious about bringing conversion into your business, I can't imagine that there's going to be a better solution. And we like to have fun. We do drawings. We don't want to just give you words and bullets. Okay. We just don't think it's a good training mode, and we've learned that from our testing as well. So if you are interested, we are going to start forming the next group very soon, and I can provide a link that you can go and sign up, even if you just want information at this point, and perhaps join one of these groups that are going to become the next front of testers on the web, and the next set of websites, by the way, that are going to get better for all of us. So
yeah, and you can find out more about it on your website.
Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a specific link to go to, so that folks here, because right now you wouldn't find it on our website.
Okay.
So it's a little inside. If you go to http://conversi.com/quickwins, that will get you to a page where you can give us your email address, and we'll let you know when we're ready.
Awesome. So what is one thing that optimizers can do to really take their website or their conversion rates to the next level?
I'm going to say language. It's, experiment with your headlines. Make sure that your landing pages keep the promises made in your ads. Play with the way you present information. If there are steps involved, do that. On landing pages, don't speak about your company and its products. Talk about the offer. So if it's a landing page for a white paper, or if it's a landing page just to launch a trial for an online service, or if you want them to subscribe to your content, talk about that. Don't talk about you, your company. If you want to build trust or credibility of your well-known company, you can put a little blurb in there about who you are and why you're credible, but it's not persuasion is not selling. Persuasion is educating. And so if you can use these landing pages to get them the assets that will help them make a good decision about whether to buy you, that's better than talking about how wonderful you are.
Yeah. Educate them and persuade them to actually convert. Love it. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Brian. I appreciate it.
I am glad to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to the Marketing Optimization Podcast.
Stay connected with Alex at Alex Designs.
Today's tips, along with past video recordings, are available at marketingoptimization.tv.